Fonz, that wasn't just us two. It was a three shooter.
Yeah. We haven't had one of those for a while.
No, we haven't. It's the Pilot 51.
Pilot 51.
We're officially closer to the end than we are to the beginning now with the Pilot 51.
Over the hump.
Over the hump. And it's a really good show because not only did we crack beer cans to start the show, we cracked them with Greg Tracy. Greg, what's up, man?
How are you? Hey, hey. Man, this is an honor to be here with you guys.
Well, it is an honor to have you in the house here. We are in back in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Fonz, you move out tomorrow?
Tomorrow. I'll be there over the weekend. Yeah, moving over the weekend. Zip code, changing my zip code, 90814.
Did you figure it out?
Yeah, 90814. Okay. Yep.
Are you going to get that tatted on your on your back or
on my forehead? On my forehead. Yeah,
yeah. Forehead or neck is probably best.
Or at least
or tramp stamp. Tramp stamp. That would be awesome.
Exactly.
When I go to the beach, everybody knows.
Yep. Greg, you're hanging loose. You're here. It's an honor to have you in the house, man. Greg, the Pilot 51, we have Greg Tracy. Greg, you are all things, man, entertainment. We can say full throttle entertainment, man. You're a stunt driver, stunt coordinator, a motocross hero. What else, man? Anything on wheels, you are probably the king of, dude.
Yeah, no, pretty much. Anything on wheels is a good... Motocross, not so much motocross. I mean, I've did the Pikes Peak Hill Climb in the last 18 years.
Only.
Talked about that quite a bit. Yeah, I've got to win that 7 times. It's a lot of fun. Rose through racing motorcycles and motocross through high school, broke my back and my neck for the second time, I guess, in high school. And that was the end of my motocross career. Transitioned into racing cars, and which ultimately led to becoming a stuntman, stunt driver, really, probably more than anything, a stunt driver.
Yeah.
So you see a car slide in a commercial on a movie, flipping, crashing. That's probably me or one of my buddies.
That's probably all right. I believe it. I'm always like, the guy you can't see, that's Greg right there. That guy you can't see in the silhouette of the window.
There's a reason for that. I got a face for radio, so.
You too?
Yeah. You're in the perfect place, man. You're in the perfect place. Excuse me. Let's talk about Pikes Peak really quick, man. Describe Pikes Peak to our listeners. It's in Colorado.
Yeah, so Pikes Peak, Colorado. It's Colorado Springs just above there. It is a mountain, obviously. Pikes Peak Mountain. It's 14,250 feet high. Jeez. And this crazy dude back in the day had the idea to build a road to the top, really kind of to prove, something about Colorado. It's also the start of the first really big hotel there. So they started racing on this road. It's the second oldest race in the United States. I think this last year was the 100th anniversary since when it started. So it's 156 turns and 12 and a half miles.
Jeez.
And it's anywhere from like 50 feet to 3,000 feet off the side. I think Bobby Unser said at one point that, there's places that if you go off the side there, you'll starve to death before you hit the ground. It's literally like that far down.
You get tired of yelling. Yeah. You can't like yell anymore.
But it was the beauty was always when I first race there was in 96, it was dirt all the way to the top. So there's really not any guardrails. It was almost like a...
Holy
you know,
crap.
Like a high school running track sort of feel to it.
Gotcha.
So you're sliding the whole way, you know.
Jeez. And what speeds are you traveling?
Back in the day, I think probably the quick times were in the 11s and 12s minutes. So, somewhere around the 60 mile an hour average.
Okay.
Over the years, they started paving it more and more as the environmental impact, supposedly. Don't get me started on that. But they basically forced the guys to pave the road. And so now it's completely paved. So the records continue to drop, obviously, with the asphalt.
Yeah.
Now that it's been paved for 4 or 5 years, it's degraded a lot over the years. So I think the road's actually gotten slower, but the speeds are still super quick. Like top speed, I think I won it in 2015, 14. Yeah, top speeds are like 158, 160 miles an hour.
Holy
wow.
So, record of 9 minutes and 8 seconds, electric class. So. You're flying. I mean, there's spots you can hardly see.
Not only flying, you're flying while changing directions. It's not like it's a linear thing, man. Right. That's crazy. What do you know? Do you have any idea what the speeds were like when the race first started?
Oh, you know, surprisingly enough, they were pretty quick. Some of these old guys back in the day, they're no helmets and these, you know, look like they're horse-drawn carriage cars almost, Model T's and things. Guys sliding around on the corners. I think it was like 18 minutes, 15 minutes. Okay, so not that far off the pace.
You can
really
still get a breeze then.
He's exactly. Okay. Yeah. Still hurt to crash if you went off the side.
Yeah, but if you fell off the bike, would it like, at that time, those guys would walk like a penguin, Charlie Chaplin
style.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because it's old time. They'd just waddle.
Real quick. Yeah. It just sped up. Yeah, you know, that's the funny thing actually there too. It's when I first went to race in 96, I was racing cars full time. I was really trying to make my way to the Indy 500 at that point. So I'd already kind of transitioned out of bikes from the mid-80s when I broke my back in 86 at Anaheim Stadium in a Supercross race.
Yeah.
When I was in high school. And I thought, well, if I ride a motorcycle while I'm learning the road, if I get into trouble, I can just jump off. And but you're going, honestly, you're which sort of makes sense if you think about it, but you're going so fast that that is not you know, you just, it's pure luck.
Yeah.
Whether you, it just depends on where you crash.
Jeez.
Whether you're going off the side
it's
or not.
It's freaking nuts, man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so fascinated by that story, and why I want to talk about it is because for a long time, I only knew of Colorado of the football team, the Denver Broncos, and I absolutely despise that team. And so I associate, like, every city I haven't visited, I associate the team or whatever I know, and that's kind of how I feel about that city until I finally went. And or I went to the state, and so I went to Denver, and then I've been to Colorado Springs, and it is a remarkable. They got that thing down right over there. They kind of got like the gun toters, the hipsters, and the jocks, and they kind of all live harmoniously over there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, actually.
It's fantastic. We did a show out there, in Golden, Colorado, and along the interstate between Denver and Golden, we did a show out there, and. I can't get enough of that town. That town or that whole area, that whole Denver and Colorado Springs, just everything there is awesome.
Air Force Academy and the most weed shops of any place in the country. So.
Hey. Oh, keep it down.
And great beer.
That's the thing. It's like we thought we were like we had a wild hair, so we decided to like start very early in the morning. I think around 10 a.m. we decided to hit the first brewery there and you know, see where the day ends up. And we went and had it, and we realized we're like everyone else. There's people there, like, you know how people go to Starbucks, they're just going there for a pint and then carry about their business. Yeah. It's pretty hilarious.
We saw parents with their strollers waking up too. It's like, why coffee when you can have beer, you know?
Like right. walking mommy groups, you know, like just getting a pint. I'm like, this is fantastic.
I love this place.
Yeah, I think it's part of their law.
Yeah, probably. So you're a 7-time champ. That in comparison to what my week has been like is doesn't compare. Mm-mm. But I can tell you, Fonz, I am just as excited because my Long Beach life search for a barber is over.
It's over.
It is over. I can tell you that I think I've gone to pretty much, well, that's exaggerating. So, but I'm going to say it anyway. According to my calculations, I've been to every single barber shop in Long Beach. And by every single one, I mean just a handful. And I mean, it hasn't even been like, oh, I got a haircut that comes close to what I used to get my hair.
Yeah.
It's like straight up butchery. So like I'd rather blindfold myself, drink a handle of vodka, and go ahead and cut my hair with my non-dominant hand. That's kind of what I would want to do. And then I still think I outdo everywhere where I've gotten a haircut.
But the only bad thing about that is that you have one less reason to go to Southgate now.
That's true. And that really sucks. But you know what? I actually went and my barber was, he was on vacation.
Oh,
and I should have called. I think that's what people do in this day and age with smartphones and everything, call. But I was like, that's how old school I am with this barber. He's been cutting my hair since 1992. But you know, I think I need a backup plan. But man, I had such a good experience that I think it's just going to be, you know, yeah, you're right. I think I might stick with this guy in this place. And where I went to was American Vintage, and it's over here on 2nd Street. And really 2nd Street here in Long Beach, there's a lot of trendy places, and there's things that, like, you know, it's probably like where a tourist gets a haircut or something like that. But, you know, I went to American Vintage. It's a really cool place, down to earth. They did offer me the beer, though, Fonz. You know how I feel about that.
What?
They offered me a beer.
No way.
Yeah, but you know how I feel about that. Yeah, like, I don't like associating having a beer.
No massaging.
I'm not a massage guy. I'm not a beer guy with my haircut. I just want a haircut. I'll drink my beers with Greg Tracy at my own house when I feel like it. I got to freaking...
I appreciate that.
The greatest truck driver in the world, and I got the greatest podcaster in the world. So, you know, that's who I want to have my beers with.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, man, the guy there, his name's Jesse. He owns American Vintage, and he fixed me up, man. He fixed me up, and it was good, and I was so happy I walked out of there. I was just like, this is amazing. Yeah. This is how you're supposed to feel when you get a haircut. Greg, you get your haircut there,
I get
right?
my haircut there. I've been getting my haircut there for quite some time, and total agreement. I mean, these guys are slayers. Actually, there's one gal there, too, and she's incredible as well. You know, that's one of the things about my business is it's very hard for me to make like a scheduled appointment of anything. It's always like, oh, okay, I'm home today. I'm going to go try and get a haircut. So it's usually a walk-in, which means you kind of just got to go who's ever available. And I've had my haircut by everybody there, Matt, Jesse, the whole gang. And they're all great. Great guys.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know you don't like to drink beer when you're getting your haircut. I think it's a pretty good idea.
I think that's just me. I think I'm the only guy.
Yeah, if I ever decide to cut my hair off, I think I'll go there then.
All right.
I don't know what the hell.
It's a cool vibe, man. It's pretty cool.
I will go for the beer and a massage if they're offering.
Yeah, they do. I'm telling you, I'm the only weirdo in the group, I think. I did find some, they put the towel on your face.
Yeah.
And I've always been like, why? I don't need a towel on my face. Get it off me. Get it off. But I realize it's for the hair that's on your face. They move it, you know what I mean? They move it down. But I think I figured that out because this dude knows what he's doing. Rather than the times before where it's like a little, like they're fluffing or they're like pushing on my face. I'm like, I couldn't make the connection why the hell they would do that. I'm like, I also don't need to feel good on my face. Like, I just want my haircut. But it's to get the hair, like I can't, like I left, like I didn't need to take a shower after.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's why they do that. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because that was a pretty cool experience. Not only was my hair butchered and they were able to, not only did I get a good haircut, but my hair was butchered and they fixed it. So it's pretty good. So I had to give a little shout out. That is not, and I got the most, I am far away from my head being symmetrical. Like, I mean, I have like a, I don't know, just this oddball rock of a head, of a noggin. And so... Keeping it clean, keeping it tight. I appreciate it.
Solid call.
That's right. So, but I had to throw that out. What's up with you, Fonz? What's going on with you?
Dude, just finished packing, ready to row. Long Beach, I'm on my way. I'll be here. So my drive, actually my walk, it'll be a walk from here now.
Yeah.
So me and Walter have been friends since junior high, since sixth grade.
Yeah, you got to talk about what would that be, like 1992. Greatest year in the world, 92.
So we both lived in Southgate, and we had maybe half a mile. We lived half a mile away from each other. Now, again, we're living half a mile away from each other.
There you go.
So it's like, what, 20 years later or something, right? Over 20 years.
The funny part is, like, when I start to think about that, is like, I don't think our clothing style has changed.
I still
wear, like, Nikes, jeans, and T-shirts.
Yeah. I just bought some Doc Martens. So same thing, go. Doc Martens. All I need is a Slayer shirt. And I still probably have the same 501 jeans that I had since junior high.
Yeah.
And so I'm set. Rock and roll.
There we go.
Maybe I'll just cut them up since I'm living by the beach, right?
That's true.
Cut up my jeans and some Doc Martens.
Where do you think this dude should check out once he gets to Long Beach? What do you think he should do?
Oh, man, there's so much to do. That's the beauty of Long Beach. It's probably one of the best cities. I mean, that's one of the... beauties of my job. I get to travel all over the place and go to some amazing towns, and I'm always so fired up to get back to Long Beach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the place, right? Obviously, Belmont Shores, where I live, fantastic. The water, you've got the water. Tons of stuff to do out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. You got to go to JoJo's.
JoJo's big on the list. I mean, that's like mandatory.
Yeah.
What's the furthest away from Long Beach you've seen a JoJo's t-shirt?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I did see one on the top of Pike's Peak. That was pretty cool.
No way.
Yeah. Just some
Are
random.
Are you serious?
Guy, yeah. It was actually the guy didn't even know the race was going. Because the race finishes obviously at the top, and then you have to wait for everybody to finish, and then everybody goes down together. But there's a train that goes to the top for tourists. So a lot of times we're finished at the race, and there's these tourists show up. They're like, wow, I didn't know there's a race going on. No clue. Spice compliant. This was one of those guys, JoJo shirt.
Typical. Far for the course. That's the kind of people you're going to see in JoJo's.
Right.
You guys are racing up, and he's going to race back down.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I saw one in Salt Lake City. I think that's the farthest I've been where I've seen one. I've seen, but you know, it's in Long Beach. I've seen them all over Southern California, just random places, like doing like random things, like you mentioned Southgate. Like sometimes I'm in that area, yeah. So then I'll drive. Oh, like when I have to go to the air, I've seen one at the airport. I've seen one at a Dodger game.
So I got to pick up that shirt. I got to pick up a sticker from the pot holder. Right.
Yep. You got to pick up a sticker from the potholder. Yeah.
What else?
Get a haircut at American Vintage.
American Vintage.
Yeah.
Fantasy Castle, I think, is in Long Beach.
Got to go to Fantasy Castle.
Yeah, I guess that's it. There you go. That's your first mission right there. All of those right there.
I've heard about it. I don't know about it.
There you go. Really quick, with Pikes Peak. Not only have you rode it so much, but you've also mentored other racers.
Yeah, that was actually we did that. This was the first year that I'd missed it as a racer.
What did that feel like?
Yeah, you know, it was actually I thought it was gonna be much more difficult than it was. I had raced for Ducati, won the race for them a couple times, some big races for them. It was the first time for the Hypermotard, first time for the Multistrada, which are two bikes that they make, fantastic motorcycles. Anyways, though, the last 2 years, so 2014 and 15, a motorcycle rider was killed in the race. So, you know, it's a dangerous place. I mean, I don't even know how you get around it. Obviously, the speed you're carrying and, you know, remember Ivan Stewart, famous off-road racer, saying it's not the speed of life that scares me, it's the sudden stop at the end. And it's pretty much the case. Obviously, you're going 150 miles an hour, crashing into rocks, it's not good. But so Ducati actually came up with this fantastic idea to bring back four past champions and sort of mentor the other riders, give them our insight, you know, really try to lead them through the first day, even tech, all the way through every practice, into qualifying, into the race, and really trying to keep their heads on straight. And it worked well. I mean, I think we didn't have anything too serious happen this year.
Yeah. But, so. You know, I also don't want to, I mean, wow, for listeners who are kind of trying to figure this out in their head, listening to the show, help me paint the picture of how dangerous doing that. The fact that you did it for so many years, how dangerous is that? Like, what kind of injuries have past competitors suffered or, you know,
yeah,
or often is, you know, injury or death? Like,
surprisingly enough, there have not been all that many people killed there. I mean, I think even since I have been racing it, there's been four, maybe.
Okay, four five, too many?
Like yeah. Yeah, and obviously there's been some big crashes. I mean, I broke my back and my hip there myself. Jeez. I've been knocked unconscious a few times and a few other pretty heavy injuries.
Yeah.
Which is actually how you and I met, Walt, really. I'm sure you remember is I've had issues with my hip from a labral tear.
Yeah.
Part of that crash that they want to do surgery on, and I just really don't want to take the time off to do that. So, strengthen the core.
That's right, baby.
And
we've
been slaying it on that. That's been good. Strong as an ox.
Yeah.
But that is a part. I mean, obviously, when you're doing anything that risky, things are going to happen. You're going that fast. Even you bring the best guys on the planet that are showing up to race it. Everybody wants to win. You're pushing it 10 tenths. And like anything, when you're pushing it 10 tenths, you don't leave a lot of room for error.
Yeah.
So things come up, and sometimes that's just how it works. But everybody that goes there knows that that's a possibility. So
yeah,
I've always been one that's, you know, hey, it's up to you. You want to roll the dice on your own life? It's kind of your choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's 156 turns on that race, right?
Right.
How do you break that down?
Everybody does it different. Wow. Yeah, everybody does it different. I mean, my brother, who's actually won it 8 times, also a Long Beach guy, Gary Tracy, amazing rider. He remembers things like every crack and crevice and rock when I break at this turn and I see that pole, and I don't. I always just, it's kind of by feel.
Okay.
So you do, I think, probably have a tendency because the way they ultimately break the mountain into thirds. So because there's so many people racing. So when you're doing the practices, you'll run the bottom third, the middle third, and the top third, and you qualify on the bottom third. So you never get the opportunity to race the entire road or run the entire road. You have those three practices, and then you have a day off, and then on race day is the first time you ever go from the bottom to the top.
Oh, wow.
So that's another, like, mental trick there, right, of getting yourself ready for it. So I guess in a way, like, the bottom part, of course, you're still in the tree line because there's still trees. As you get up towards the top, there's no trees. The altitude's so high, so speeds are a little higher on the very top. There's no trees, so you come around corners where there's no... You're turning into a corner that the cliff's on the inside and there's nothing on the outside except blue sky. So you better know where you're going, because it's real easy to go off.
Get lost up there, right?
So crazy easy.
So, like, is there, like, a, since you've done it multiple times, is there, like, a morning routine that you do prior to the race, or, like, a meal that you would have, anything, like, that got you ready, or you just...
No, not really. I mean, and actually, with practice, the way it's set up, because you're going so high and it takes so long to get there, and all the practices are done before 9 a.m., it's still a tourist mountain, so people are driving up from 9 all day long. So, you know, you're out the hotel door at 2:30 in the morning, 2 in the morning.
Wow.
Stop by 7-Eleven, grab some coffee, get up there. I don't know if I have really any kind of particular ritual. I'm not really that superstitious.
Gotcha.
Try not to drink too much the night before.
That's probably the routine right there. Try not to drink a lot the night before. We were doing Pike's Peak, dude.
Huh?
We're doing it. Even we have to Uber from the bottom to the top. Even we just Uber.
Uber would be interesting. I like that idea. That's a great idea.
We would probably have the record because we'll record it. We'll document it in a body and then like... We will have.
No, we got something there. We're going to do an Uber class next year. That's fantastic.
Uber class.
You got to call and you got to get in and make it to the top. Whoever gets there.
That's it. Yeah, call it. Yeah, you got to call it from like a. You got to be at a brewery somewhere and then call it from there. Gosh, I was thinking about places you got to go. Another one. One of the things, or at least one of the personalities that Long Beach has, is they pride themselves, I think, on breakfast. And Taco Tuesdays, dude. I feel like those things are, you go everywhere in Long Beach, there's something like that going on. There's like a breakfast nook, like a Sterling Diner is going to be close to where you live. The
close,
pot holder.
I just got to roll out of bed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Greg, if you didn't know, he's renting a bus stop bench. That's what he's going to live.
I know exactly where you're going to be living. I'll stop by.
I think I'll put like a wire. From my place to
send
Sterling.
Your order?
Yeah,
send
to send
like
my
the
order.
Little
or just
clip.
Pull it back up in the bucket, you know?
You just yell across right there.
Yeah. Or just tell them, hey, can you bring it up here? I'll just have my table set up right there with my coffee, or they can bring me my coffee too.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Dude, you have these like legit legendary places like that place, the Potholder. Those are legit.
Chucks.
They're, Chucks. Oh my God, get the Rascal.
Right, old school as you get. That's
that is
Chucks.
The
Let me write
Chucks.
That one down.
And but there are some newer places. I right now I found myself gravitated to. It's called the Local Spot. It's do you know the Local
Spot?
Yeah,
that's really good. Love that place.
It's a really cool place. It's a sleeper place. Nothing fancy, but breakfast shouldn't be fancy. They just do it right. They don't mess it up.
Yeah.
I guess pretty much is, and that's what you want out of your breakfast. Don't screw up eggs.
Breakfast.
Don't screw up bacon. Don't screw up coffee.
Especially don't mess up my bacon. Man.
Don't mess up the bacon. Bacon.
Oh, the bacon.
So and then the Taco Tuesday. The best place I found is a place on 10th Street. So you got to get out a little bit of here, the Belmont area, but you get onto 10th Street, which isn't that far. But it's called El Torazo, and the Taco Tuesdays are phenomenal. What's close to that, part of that experience, is that it's so phenomenal that you'll see all walks of life.
Yes.
Everything. It's
have
awesome.
Beer there too?
It's like talking dogs will order it. Yeah. They do have beer. They do have beer. They got a TV on there that's usually playing some sort of soccer. It is a Mexican joint. But it is phenomenal, dude. So they got these like discounted tacos, but they got like an American taco, a Mexican taco, and a crunchy taco.
What?
And they got like a potato taco, and they got the Mexican stuff. And then all the American means, it's like a corn-sized tortilla, but it's flour, and then they add cheese on it. But it's still same meats and everything, and the crunchy is whatever you want to get crunchy. But it is phenomenal, dude. So those are places you got to go to.
Yes.
Get your JoJo's, get your Rascal at Chuck's.
Yeah, you buy, I'll fly. It sounds good.
Exactly. Pilot 51, Franz. This is awesome. We've reached the hump.
Yeah, we're up on the hill. We're coming back down.
We're on the other side of Pike's Peak, man. We're the JoJo's dude, the JoJo's t-shirt wearing guy. We're the tourists. We made it up. We're on our way down.
We should do Pike's Peak in a Taurus. like the Taurus. Didn't
like your the dad car the Taurus?
Yeah, the Taurus, yeah.
As we should. We should find like a late 2000 model or early 2000 model Taurus.
No, your dad had the Escort. We had the Escort back in the day, remember?
We had the Escort. Yeah. I drove that. That was like my car, which was an amazing car. Experience.
We should drive that one.
I got to tell you guys, I can share a story. Are you familiar with the fantastic Ford Escort?
Of course, yeah.
That car is...
Do you remember what year it was?
Yeah, it was 1982. It was 1984 Ford Escort. This is, yes. I want to talk about this story. This is why I know. So if you fast forward from 1984 to about 2003, which is when I owned the car, 2003, I'm sitting there, I'm working at a UPS at the time. There's a joint where we used to go after work, Mike's Hockey Burger over there on Washington Soto. And we're sitting there. This place is a big boxing. They love that guy who owns it. It's a big boxing guy. Larry Merchant would go in there every now and then, play cards with the owner. And anyway, they play boxing. So the Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran fight was on, right? And it was on. I mean, it looks old.
It's pretty epic.
It's but it's an awesome fight, right?
But the fact that it's called Mike's Hockey Burger and they show boxing.
All day.
All day.
Yeah. That's a cool
place. Burgers are tougher than pucks.
Oh, exactly. Oh, yeah. Just call it the Mike's Hockey Puck. There's like a big hockey guy outside. And we're watching this fight, right? And so it goes into like the middle of the third round. We're sitting there. Everyone's kind of drinking. Everyone's talking shit. And it goes into commercial. And it goes, and now introducing, it's faster, it's sleeker, and it's got my car, like, coming out of, like, out of the screen, like, it's going over a hill, and it's, like, they're, like, the commercial's, like, it's a 1980, first of all, it's a commercial in 1984.
It, like, got up an inch off the ground.
Think about what that looks like, dude. Yeah, exactly. It's, like, coming out. And, you know, that place at, like, 2 in the morning, it's the same people, it's the people you work with. Seriously, everyone in the goddamn restaurant turned around like, that's Walt's car. Yeah. I was like, fuck Walter. Yeah, dude. 2004.
With the Miami Vice graphics in the background?
Yeah, dude, it's like, if you can make it last for 5 more years, your shit's classic.
Yeah. They had 4 Summer Olympics between when that car was made exactly. And when they started driving it.
Exactly. And was pretty fucking hilarious. The Ford Escort, dude. That's
good
right.
Good times.
Greg. You probably don't drive Ford Escorts, but I'm sure you've driven... Well, you probably don't drive them now. I'm sure you've driven every freaking car in the world, probably ever created. Have you driven any, like, what are they called? Concept cars? You've driven, like, Franken cars?
Yeah, I've actually driven quite a few concept cars, like, commercial-wise and things. Of course, the funny thing with the concept cars is they're really not meant to be driven for the most part.
Are they just for show? Enough.
Yeah, they're for show. I mean, it's like they'll use parts and pieces from other cars to make it work, so... You know, you might get into something that looks like it's going to go 240. Like, all right, don't take this thing over 18 miles an hour or it will explode. So, yeah, but no, I've gotten to drive just about everything. It's a great way to know what's good out there. That's for sure.
That's a cool little tidbit to find out. If you see a concept car, you're like, yeah, my 1984 Escort can drive faster than that bad boy.
Yeah.
Have you seen the new ones now, like that they build just specifically for commercials where they can, like, expand the wheelbase and the size of the car, so they'll drive the commercial and then add the graphics on top of that, so it's just like a black car where they can expand the wheelbase so they can see the wheels rolling,
so it's like in real time rather than like a computer
like Avatar. You know how they made the movie Avatar where you're seeing the people and they have the dots and everything, so they have that on a car so they can put the car graphics on top of it after they're done. So doing the turns, it's a pretty cool. I saw you on YouTube. So they can change the whole car to make it act like the car that they're trying to make a commercial for.
Gotcha.
It's pretty cool. So it's sliding and doing everything that the car would do.
Greg, tell us
I hate those guys, actually, because that's like going to put me out of a job at some point. It's just basically a CG car. So it's put the points in on it, and then they can build whatever they want out of it.
Yeah.
After the fact, which of course, then they don't need a stunt driver. They just need some computer to drive around.
Well, they still have the actual car. They still have an actual car doing all the moves.
Yeah, sort of. But then they can put like 20 cars on there. So.
Oh yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
Preference is that it just blows up, and then I never see that thing ever again. But it is great technology. I will give them that.
Yeah. Speaking of work, tell us about Drivers Inc.
Yeah, so Drivers Inc. is the stunt driving team that I'm a part of. You know, honestly, I think it's been around now for like 20 plus years, 25, 30 years.
Damn.
Really brought together by some of the original superstars in the stunt driving world.
And you barely gave me a hat?
I know. After 20 years? I haven't been with him for 20 years, but it's a pretty long time.
Okay, got it. Yeah, got it, okay.
So it's pretty great when you think, like, you know, car commercials, professional driver clothes course you'll see on the screen. It's usually one of us.
Really? Is it like...
Pretty small, tight-knit community. Obviously, like anything, when you're taking... you've got $500,000 cameras and crews and people, and you need a car to slide up to a $100,000 lens. You kind of want to know who that guy is. So you develop a name and reputation, especially as a team like Drivers Inc. And we've got some amazing guys. I mean, think of the stories that come out of that team.
Jeez.
And we've broken multiple world records. We've got drifting world champions, Reese Millen, Paul Dallenbach, who's a famous race car driver, one of my Pikes Peak teammates. The guy that I saw John Oates with, Hall & Oates, last week.
Yeah. So another
little piece to that. Eddie Braun, who just jumped the Snake River Canyon and Evel Knievel's rocket last weekend.
Okay.
That was Air Force, one of the members.
Sweet.
So it's a pretty rock and roll group.
So you can say, like, that network does, like, if you've seen a commercial and there's something with four wheels moving, it's probably coming out of that.
Most likely, yeah. I mean, there's a few other guys. There's a couple other teams, but in terms of, like, the superstar talent, that's probably from Drivers Inc.
When you think of a stunt driver, you think of, like I don't know, off a ramp, explosions. Are a lot of your jobs also, like, the everyday, like the car driving through the neighborhood kind of thing? Like,
yeah, surprisingly enough, I mean, you think about this. You know, the commercial, so often the actors don't know how to drive. Actresses, and maybe they've never even driven. They're from New York, and, you know, they're able to take public transportation everywhere. They literally can't drive.
That's funny.
But surprisingly enough, I mean, some of the stuff, it seems simple. You know, maybe it's just pulling up and hitting a mark, but the camera's got, you know, a quarter inch on each side of the wheel when you come to a stop or a sliding stop that they obviously don't want you in that window. So when you think about a commercial or TV show or movie, yeah, you're talking anywhere from, you know, $20,000 to several $100,000 a day to make that filming happen. So it's really good when you get it done in one take. So, like, our job is to show up. You tell us what you want done. You want us to slide around that corner, put the back of the car that close to the wall, come to a stop right there. We can do it, and we'll do it in one or two takes. And
done,
so we can move on to the next shot. Yeah, not all day. Don't spend all day on it.
I think that's probably, time is probably valuable when it comes to
shooting.
Yeah, very
valuable when it comes to
filming. So if you can get that out of the way. We can go on IMBD. We can look at all the amazing things you've done as a stunt driver or anything you've done. What are some cool things you've done that really stand out where you feel like that was a cool experience?
Yeah, you know, so often the stuff that you think is going to be exciting isn't that exciting, and then stuff that you weren't expecting to be that exciting is all of a sudden crazy.
Yeah.
You know, probably one of the most original oddball things, I jumped a pedal car, like an like the bumper cars, basically a bumper car from Knott's Berry Farm with the pole out the back, little flat seat, down the steepest street in San Francisco at like 65 miles an hour. They pushed me off from the top. Hustled down at a police car chasing me and hit this thing. I was like 8-9 feet off the ground. I went probably like 75 feet, landed, steering shaft broke on the next take. You know, just stuff like that. That's like,
that's,
you know, obviously
awesome. Yeah.
the Bourne movies and not porn, but Bourne.
Well, okay. Bourne. Oh, well, I was about to say.
I had a problem with that before. People looking like, whoa, that's a bad one. But worked on the Bourne Ultimatum. One that was part of the group that won the World Stunt Award for that.
Yeah,
you know, just crazy driving stuff. And that particular second unit director, Dan Bradley, is just known for big time action. And he likes to just go 10 tenths every time, which is cool.
Yeah.
As a stunt guy, you like that. You know, it doesn't have to all just be a trick of camera. Like, let's go actually go into oncoming traffic at 60 miles an hour and have near misses.
Is that what you're talking? You a Screen Actors Guild Award for Outstanding Performance by a Stunt Ensemble?
Probably.
So that's what it says you won. So if you didn't know, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm here to you, to unofficially present that to you.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously the Hot Wheels stuff for me, we really helped design and create the whole world of Hot Wheels. And we broke three world records in 16 months, coordinated a couple of them. And then I did the Hot Wheels loop at the X Games in 2012,
sweet,
which was Tanner Faust and I racing into a seven-story high loop, 70 feet high. Coming out of it and then hitting like a 60-foot-plus jump.
To add that on top of already doing the loop.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah,
and the cool part, I mean, not that that was not cool, but it was also, he did a year in Long Beach.
Oh, you did it here in the LB?
That was actually X Games downtown Los Angeles.
Oh, it was yeah. LA. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So it was close.
Oh, my bad. I thought it's someone said Long Beach. Oh, you know what it was? I was reading it and they said he's from Long Beach. Yeah. It was a newspaper from Long Beach that wrote it up. He said you're a local.
And it's always so funny. Like, that's one of the things, you know, I've been lucky enough to get to go talk at my kids' school a few times and some of their assemblies, and you know, really just trying to talk about safety and helmets and gear and things like that. And it's so crazy now. Like, I see my own kids. I have an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 19-year-old. But you watch the young ones, like, they want everything right now. Like, I want it right now. Like, everything, you know, we'll go out. He's never, hey, what do you want to do today? Oh, I want to become not something he said, but let's just say I want to learn how to sword fight. If he doesn't know how to, like, win the Olympics in the first 3 seconds, he's pissed off and throws the sword down and walks away, right?
Yeah.
So it's always that development of, like, listen, this stuff takes forever. Yeah. These guys that you see the videos, and that, in a way, that's one of the things that scares me as a parent. You look at some of the videos of YouTube or whatever, the YouTube, as my dad would say. you look at the YouTube, and you see these guys doing these crazy, like, 30-foot gap jumps and throwing the bikes around, and, you know, a little kid looks at that like, oh, I'm just going to go...
Why not? Yeah.
They don't realize that they literally started out 25 years before, and that's all they do every day.
Obviously having some courage, that's an important part, but we've had some long conversations about, like, the engineering or the mathematical, the things that play in a part to make stunts work. Courage is an important component, but at the same time, it has to make sense. You have to go X miles an hour and X amount of speed to cover X amount of ground.
Right.
Speaking about stunts, you mentioned earlier Eddie Braun jumped Snake Canyon in Twin Falls. So Eddie Braun did not do Napoleon Dynamite Part 2. That might have been a
rumor. He may have. I don't know.
Maybe.
He's in a lot of movies.
but you were there for that.
Yeah, rock star moment. I got to say, you know, for me, so often going to events, especially things like, you know, whether it's racing or big world record stunt things, it's really hard to not be doing it myself. But this is one of those deals, he's been talking about this and planning on it for years. So I'm sure most everybody knows Evel Knievel attempted to do this 42 years ago. Built this rocket. Guy who designed it, engineer, was named Bob Truex. Rocket takes off. Right when it takes off, the parachute comes out, and it basically parachutes down into the canyon where Evel Knievel gets injured, but not terribly injured. Could have been, you know, a death sentence for sure. But anyways, he survives it. And a lot of people at the time were like, this was a hoax. It was just a big stunt. The parachute was always going to come out. He was never going to make it. And it really weighed on Evel and on the Truex family, who really felt like the science and all the stuff they put together was right on. So his son, Scott, has just made it like his lifelong goal from when he was a kid, and he's to prove his dad's stuff was right.
Yeah.
And Eddie Braun, who's on Drivers Inc., amazing guy, amazing stunt guy, one of the most original dudes I've ever met. Like, just, you know, he tells you how it is, totally committed to what he does, and he wanted to do it. He was a big Evel Knievel fan and decided he wanted to do it, put his own money up to make it happen, and invested a ton of money to really make it happen again. So they had the exact same rocket, which, I mean, in my mind, like, I would have put a ton more. I mean, there's a lot more safety now than there was in 1972 or 4,
images,
whatever it was.
Yeah, you see images of this rocket, dude.
Seriously. Oh, his head's like sticking out of the top. There's no roll hoop. I mean, there's so many things you could put airbags in there now. They don't know anything, right?
You think you pulled it out of like a Little Rascal soapbox derby set, dude? Like, you pulled that out and like, okay, let's fly this over the canyon, over the Snake Canyon.
But it was just so, so cool. So he decided, you know, finally he's going to do it. And this was this last weekend. And I took my 8-year-old son up there. We went up crazy. Like, you show up, the group of guys that are there, Gary Davis, who's an amazing stunt guy, stunt coordinator, been around forever, did a bunch of Evel Knievel-type jumps and things back in the day. A guy named Buddy Joe Hooker, who was the guy that jumped the car in Hooper, the movie Hooper, across the bridge that wasn't there. Like, the most legitimate car stunt guys of all time. Spanky Spangler. I mean, come on, best name ever, right?
Come walk, just speaking of Little Rascals.
Yeah, just walking up through the people that were there. Daredevil Doug, guy named Jesus Gene, like the best names of all time. These guys over there.
All this for this event.
All this for just to see him, you know, all the really paying respect not only to Evel Knievel, but to the fact that Eddie was willing to go for it himself.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, like, okay, you're going across a canyon that's, you know, 700, 800 feet, 1,000 feet, whatever it was across. It's 500 feet deep. and you're shooting off in a rocket that's steam powered. You press the button and it goes from like 0 to 430 miles an hour in 1.3 seconds.
So it's literally just a rocket, no wheels, nothing.
No, it was a sky cycle, so there was actually tires on it. So it's like this ramp that it's on, it like shoots it up this ramp. There actually is tires underneath. It's okay. Sort of like a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But it's a rocket.
Very minimal. Yeah. Going minimal. From 0 to 1,000 miles an hour.
It's like, just crazy. And you know, I'm thinking
it's more ornamental for the pictures.
Yeah.
And steam. And steam.
And the blacking out and the things, you know, the potential for all the stuff that could go wrong. There's some safety stuff in there. Gary Davis had a button just in case. Eddie was unconscious that he could push the parachute, but that had never been tested. So it's a lot, you know, I mean, end of the day, here's the
button
thing.
Not connected to anything. It's for safety.
Yeah. Here's the thing about stunts is so often you think like, I mean, even the loop was a good example where you really think like, oh, it's Hot Wheels and you got all these engineers and scientists and things working on it. Well, you can to a point, like you can't cover everything. The reality is if you could do 50 rocket tests with nobody in it and test every parameter and every combination, every weather scenario. And what if the first parachute doesn't come out? What if, you know, you could probably get to within a pretty reasonable number that you would be able to make it. But they really like you just, they're going on their numbers. And there was 50 things or 100 things when I got there that I looked at like, wow, if any one of these things goes wrong, he's dead. Wow. And, but, you know, a lot of it's gut instinct. And, like, I know he felt like it was right, and he had great guys around him. Scott Truex, like I said, I mean, these guys knew what they were doing.
You're saying Scott Truex dedicated his whole life.
Yeah, I mean, this was what he was wanted to make this happen. And, you know, Eddie had been at it for 4 or 5 years. So you literally, though, at that moment, like, you're pushing the button, and that thing's going. There's no, like, turning you know how I say, there's no turning back. Like, there's a point in certain things in life where there's no turning back. And I've always been, like, really fascinated by that. Maybe it's not only as a stunt guy, but whether racing or just even things in life. Like, you know, the no turning back is a big part of life. That point when you ask the question, you ask your boss for a raise, right? Once you say it, guess what? You don't get to turn it off after the fact.
You gotta live with it. You gotta live with it.
Once you ask that girl out for a day, whatever it is. And that's, to me, a really cool moment, you know?
Yeah.
Irregardless of how it turns out, sometimes it doesn't work out for you, but sometimes the magic, that's what it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, one, if it doesn't work out, that's the most successful people on the planet have failed at some point in their life. So you got to just do it. Just got to go for it.
Yeah, gotta I love the old Montana. What is like the most incomplete, or was it Favre now? Huh? I forget which guy, but
who's the missed the most?
Yeah. Well, who's made the most also has the most incomplete.
There's stats for all stats those like dudes. That, yeah. Right. Like Jordan has the most missed game-winning three-pointers out of everyone. But he's got the most made ones. Right. Yeah, you got to take that. That's fine. I think you have to.
I could easily get the most unmade, you know, baskets for sure. just given a chance, there's 100% sure.
But you can't have any other personality to do those kind of things, right? Like you have to go. You can't be worrying about like, should I hit the like? Am I an undecisive person? I'm a very by nature. I think I'm undecisive. I would suck as a stunt driver. I would be like, I forgot my keys. I left the stove on. Yeah, exactly.
Is there any stunts out there that you that on your bucket list or some sort of list that you still haven't gotten to do yet?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I definitely have some stuff in mind that I'd like to do, although I'm probably getting to the point, it's funny, you have a transition in your life where I think as a stunt guy or, you know, just as a man, you have adrenaline and testosterone, a lot of things going on in the early part of your life where you're trying to prove it, not only to yourself, but to everybody else how much of a badass you are. And then you have enough crashes and enough wins and enough successes and enough, you know, hits that you've already proved it to yourself and you don't really care about proving it to anybody else. So at that point, then there's like another reason for doing it. I'm not 100% sure what that reason is on some of that stuff, but I've had a few things over the last couple of years, some world record attempts that we've tried and some things that, you know, didn't work out, but were super risky and just awesome to be a part of. And there's still some things like that. But I also, you know, to be honest with all the talk and understanding now of concussions and, you know, I mean, we all grew up in an era where like you got a concussion. It was like a badge of courage, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hit my head so many times. I've probably had, you know, a solid 20 really good concussions. I know I've been knocked out for more than 5 minutes at a time, at least 10 times or 7 times. I can't remember. But, you know, there is a point too, especially now when I look at my kids and things, I don't really want to hit my head that hard anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I've taken enough chances that way. So that's where you start stunt coordinating and sort of picking and choosing the jobs that you want to do. It's what's so cool about getting to go mentor the guys with Ducati and, you know, I've always tried to have other business interests and invest in other things. So,
really quick, two things. One, you guys brought up earlier Leadfoot Festival. I have no idea what that was. And then number two, what's next? What's next for Greg Tracy?
All right. So number one, Leadfoot Festival. That might be my number two. Also, I went and did this a couple years ago. There's a really well-known, at least amongst the racing community, festival called the Goodwood Festival, which is in England. And it's this lord, famous guy that owns this mansion that he has a road just that he invites
random England people do. They got freaking mansions out there.
So Leadfoot Festival was started by a guy named Rod Millen, who's rock star race car driver, really Pikes Peak superstar champion, multiple record, you know, holder there. His son Reese is on my stunt team. I mentioned him earlier. Rod, very successful businessman as well as a race car driver. So, you know, invested his time and energy when he wasn't racing into business, and ultimately sold his business. And he's a New Zealand native, so he bought this, I don't even know, couple thousand acre ranch on the coast in New Zealand. And the most, I mean, like, I think they shot like The Hobbit or something. It's crazy, right? So what does a guy like that do? He has this insane house built from the main road up to his house. That's, I think, like a mile and a half, something like that. So he picked like some of his favorite turns from his racing career and built those turns into the road to get to his house.
Oh, wow.
And invited over like some of his favorite race car drivers and motorcycle racers for this event where you're timed, kind of like Pikes Peak, to see who can get to his house the fastest. But I mean, nuts. This is kind of like, not only is he just an amazing guy, just such a fun dude. His whole family's great, but incredible race car driver, like I said. But he like doesn't stop it. I mean, there's like theme nights and, you know, really a lot of like vintage clothing. And we had this fantastic dinner, and all of a sudden I look up and ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons is up playing.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty rock and roll.
Hell yeah. In New Zealand.
I'll tell you a good Billy Gibbons story. So Billy, I was doubling maybe 5 years before this particular race for a Japanese car commercial out in the middle of the desert, sliding around. Had his beard on, you know, the whole thing, trying to eat it in the lunchtime was crazy. Felt like that.
Lifting it up.
Dan Aykroyd movie with, you know, the fish or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
He, really, really, really neat guy. And we were out in like Adelanto area, which is out kind of El Mirage, staying this little Holiday Inn. Came down to grab a bite to eat. He was sitting there and invited me to sit down, and we ended up talking for like an hour or two.
Awesome.
Amazing guy, like incredibly intelligent, all sorts of stories, as you can imagine. Obviously, he's a huge car fanatic. Mm-hmm. So he's there at Leadfoot's 5-6 years later. We're in another, I mean, we're in New Zealand. We're not in the United States. There's no reason for him. We're not shooting a commercial, you know. And I walked over and I said, "Hey, Billy, just want to say hi. My name's Greg Tracy. I worked with you on a commercial." He's like, "Oh, yeah, Greg. Hey, how are you? Remember we had dinner together? Remember it was the, I honestly still don't remember what car it was," but he's like, "Yeah, the 2001 Honda R3C Japan. That was an interesting little car." I mean, just photographic memory.
Wow.
And not only, I was impressed, number one, that he had that recollection, but the fact that he even like would use it, you know, not just brush you off as just some random person, but very nice
good
guy.
That's stuff, awesome. Man.
Yeah, it was impressive.
That's cool. Billy Gibbons, baby.
Billy Gibbons.
The pride
shout
of Texas. Yeah. That's cool. What's next, man? What do you got in your calendar? What are some things you're excited about that either you're involved with or just what our listeners should know about?
Yeah, probably in general. I mean, I think you mentioned earlier, a son that just started at CU Boulder.
Woo, and rock star. Buffaloes, baby. The Buffaloes.
Son of mine, Lane Tracy. But I'm racing this Colorado Hill Climb race in our Colorado Hill Climb Championship, where they do still back to the old school dirt road days. Got this cool little race car. It's called a Wells Coyote. This famous designer named John Wells built these cars just for climbing, like these, you know, dirt hill climb, multiple turn roads.
Yeah.
So I picked up one of those on my birthday last year on eBay, and first time that I'm actually not racing for like a big factory team, just doing my own deal, showing up, which makes it so much fun. Pack my own ice chest, pick the beers I want to put in it, and all I got to do is just go have fun.
Yeah,
so that's I got a race actually coming up in October with that, and you know, really probably just getting ready to try and figure out what's next for Pikes Peak. There's a couple of world record things that are, you know, I can't really talk about, but are still out there car wise. Some things that I'd like to do.
Yeah,
that involve big altitude and cars and speed, that kind of stuff.
It's kind of your forte, right?
Yeah,
altitude,
you know?
Car,
yeah.
Speed.
Yeah.
Craig, I got to tell you, man, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you for taking your time, taking the time to hang out with us. Thank you for coming in here, dude. It's been an amazing hour. It's been really fun, man. Thanks for the stories. Oh,
so good. Love to do it again. I have stories for days.
I know. We just like literally pinky nail on the glacier, man. Fonz, anything?
Is there anything that we miss? Anything that you want to add?
Oh, and I'm sure I can come up with a million things probably on my drive home, but. No, great times, and welcome to the LBC.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm an unofficial Buffalo fan, man. Go Buffs.
Let's do it.
Go Buffs. Colorado, UFC, right? Or CU.
Keep it up, Lane. Keep getting good grades, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to worry about that. From what I know, he's been doing that for a long time. He's a shredder. Just like you've been doing what you do for a long time. And Fonz, we've been doing this for 51 shows, man.
Yeah.
Expertise shows, right?
That's what we strive for.
Gotta keep hitting it.
Greg, thank you again. Maximum respect. You, dude, you're awesome.
Cheers. Likewise, guys.
All right. Fonz?
Good night. See you Long Beach next time.
Next show will be...
Next time in Long
52.
Beach.
52. Yeah.
Coming up.